Thanks so much, Laura. And you know, for those of you who were kind of getting caught up in the story, Alice moves all over the world, and each place she lives, there's like a kind of intrigue happening as to what is it that her father really does, and maybe she's in danger and maybe she's not. So it really is, it becomes like an exciting tale, as you could see from the beginning. So I want to thank all of our speakers here today who approached very different aspects of what the ebook future might be, and probably even more. And we're happy to field your questions. Yes.
No, I sit on the educational team.
Okay.
No, it was developed by an author, an illustrator, a producer. So no, I'm not the developer.
Other questions? Yes.
Are you going to have any support structures in place for, say, academics that want to write an e-book, you know, incorporating some of the ideas that you presented here, you know, movies, things like that, that maybe don't have the technical knowledge to do so?
Who wants to take it, Ralph or Alex?
I didn't hear the whole question.
The question is, what types of support structures might be put in place in the event that the authors don't have the technical skill or knowledge to produce some of these multimedia aspects, but they still want to do it in a reference book and a learning platform alike?
I think there's a lot of publishers are incorporating new types of resources as far as, you know, bringing in multimedia savvy folks that don't have a publishing background, so to speak, but they understand the value of scholarly content. So it's actually an exciting new position in publishing that didn't exist. I mean, they're at trade houses, academic houses. At Sage, we've been building an online and CQ Press and online product management team, and really smart people that can connect the multimedia and the content, you know, with the author in the middle. So there's, you know, it's really the future. Us old editors are numbered. Our days are numbered. So that's what we're doing.
I think what I'm seeing in publishing is almost like, you know, if you go back to when the Hollywood movie studios were these big conglomerates where everybody was on the payroll, the actors, the set designers and the musicians and everybody else, and gradually that all broke down. And now when people make a movie, you have individual professionals come together, they make the movie and they move on, but there's a very tight network of people who give access to resources, and I think you're seeing some of that in this area where publishers, you know, are kind of learning the ropes themselves. What I find is happening with us, Precision Graphics, is that sometimes publishers will come to us for core competencies, either in a subject matter area or in a technical area that we may not have in our own internal staff, but we'll act as a kind of a facilitator to help connect them with resources, or can even to connect authors with resources that will enable them to get that job done. You know, it's the sort of thing that I think the environment has changed, where people fear. Have less fear about sharing knowledge or even collaborating with people who might 10 years ago have been their competitors. And I think hopefully through communities like this, you're going to find the resources to help you.
Other questions? Yes. Did everyone hear the question about business models in the future for reference and how those might be changing?
They're definitely changing with the ebook arena. I think it's, I mean, there's a lot of, like, the existing business models now, like either a licensing model or a leasing model or a perpetual model, those are somewhat restrictive as to what each publisher will allow the library to do, share content, own it. But I think that I've been in part of discussions with some of our competitors about we have complementary products, so they don't compete. And it just, you know, we joined forces to provide a service, as you say, to the library. There's a lot of added value in that. It's just a matter of, you know, what is the actual business model look like? You know, how do you generate revenue from that? How does the library pay? Is it on a... That could, yeah, I mean, it could very well be. It just depends on, you know, again, a lot of it starts with what's your internal business model of how you're disseminating your electronic content, and is it suitable for something like that, whether it's pay-per-view, subscription-based. You know, these are all things that are kind of new to us, and we're learning from the journals world is probably something that will lead that charge before reference what you're asking and describing.
Other questions? I have a question for Alex, actually. One of the things you mentioned in your presentation was fairness, and so much of what we've seen here is video and graphic in nature, and to what degree, obviously, accessibility guidelines and requirements demand that publishers and content providers pay attention to this, but what role does that take in your discussions, and I guess really across the board, to make the content accessible to everyone?
So the... One is a nice thing about the education market, at least in the higher ed space, and it follows through in LHI as well, is it's kind of a lowest common denominator, which allows you a little more time to develop your strategies versus a consumer market. So if you look right now in consumer-driven digital markets, unless you're right on the front edge in terms of the quality and experience of your content, you're going to struggle because individuals are chasing the new thing. On the education side, if you have 200 students in the classroom, you have to provide a virtually equal experience for all 200 students. So the fact that 20 of the 200 have iPads, as an example, and one I would use there is a company, Inkling, who's developing, and Inkling is going to develop and is doing things well beyond just iPad development, but as a startup, we get the question a lot about what's our iPad strategy, and to the extent that that you can develop things that are common for all the students, our system does that. But the again, unless everybody can be a part of the experience, where the students who have the better assets don't get an unfair advantage, you kind of have to tap the brakes on that until everybody catches up. And so on our end, I don't think as a content provider, we really push the screen window or the device window. That's really more in the hands of the institution and the individual students. But again, from our standpoint, we simply look at what are the ones that are kind of have reached a critical mass, and then make sure we're well-suited for that. And much like you mentioned, any Flash player, that's a challenge right now in markets because the iPad doesn't support Flash. And so that's a battle being fought completely outside the bounds of educating people, and is more of an ideological battle between companies. But it's a very cost-prohibitive battle in the sense that, you know, I would say right now no more than 5% of students that we address would consume educational content on their iPad at any high level. Yet to be there, you would have to develop an entirely different code structure to deliver your application, and it's quite, for certain things, quite complicated. So again, in some ways it's a savior because we get to wait until the battle is settled or it reaches a critical mass where it makes financial sense to do it.
Mm-hmm. Other comments?
Well, I think the key formula is the more you make your content discoverable, the more it'll be accessed. And I think it's whether you give some of your content out for free, which sounds, I guess, radical, but I think it's we're kind of pushing the envelope there. Allow free content to appear in the open web that might drive, you know, revenue down the line. License your content. Do everything you can possible within your means to make your content discoverable. I know it's a buzzword, but it's reality. And then the, you know, the more that the students will find it through some source.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Well, thank you, all of you, for agreeing to participate today, and thank you for sticking it out. I'm sure that everyone would love to, you know, have you come up if you have individual questions, and I mean, maybe since we have time, maybe Laura would even consider showing another Inanimate Alice episode. So if you want to stick around and you'd like to do that, we do have 15 more minutes in this room, and I know I'd probably like to watch one, but thank you so much.